Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel avanzado C2 de inglés. Convocatoria de incidencias de 2021. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de tres tareas. Escuchará cada grabación dos veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícelas según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. Escriba sus respuestas en la hoja de respuestas.
Task 1. You will hear some extracts corresponding to radio ads. Match each extract, 1 to 6, to the corresponding heading, A to J. There are three headings you will not need to use. Extract 0 is given as an example. Write your answers in the answer sheet provided. Now you have 1 minute to read the questions. Example.
Look, we know that boy's going to ask again, so let's be ready.
Fine, I'll be him. You ready?
Ready.
Mom, could you hook me up with a GoPhone?
You'll run up the bill, son.
Yo, that's whack, Moms. GoPhone is totally different.
What? It'll only cost me an arm?
Chillax. It has unlimited talk and text.
Seriously?
Word.
Okay, we'll get a GoPhone.
Really? Really? That is the bomb.
Do you even know what the bomb means?
Yes. No.
Hey! GoPhone, only from AT&T.
Extract 1.
With breakdown cover from the AA, we'll do whatever it takes to make sure your big wheels keep on turning. Our mechanics usually get you going again in 30 minutes. Breakdown cover from the AA. Because anything can happen.
Extract 2.
Sweetie pie. Snookums. Baby bear. Honey pot. Tootsie wootsie. Baby cakes, princess, honey bun, sugar plum, cuddle bunny, schmoopy, pookie, booger bear, buttercup, sweet cheeks, dreamboat, cuddle muffin. Have a break from Valentine's, have a Kit Kat.
Extract 3.
Hi, my name's John. I'm about to take a deep breath and try to read the following out loud in one go without stopping. If, like me, you've noticed you run out of breath doing things like playing football with your kids, you've probably thought about quitting smoking, but doing it alone can be tough. That's why I'm going to contact a local stop smoking advisor who'll give me one-to-one support and advice to make sure I quit for good. So I'll no longer run out of breath carrying out simple tasks like this one. To find a stop smoking advisor who'll give you the best chance of quitting for good, visit nhs.uk/smokefreeservice.
Extract 4.
The Chiltern Railway's London Family Travel Card is such a big deal. I'm recording this inside the ArcelorMittal Orbit, home to the biggest slide in the world! This summer, from just £25, you'll get return train tickets to London Marylebone, unlimited bus and tube journeys, and 2-for-1 on many of London's top attractions! Book your London Family Travel Card from just £25 today at chilternbigdeal.co.uk.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Extract 6.
Hey, good to see you again. What tattoo are you getting today?
Mallorca 2018, please. Really big across my back.
Nice. How many is that now?
I've got one on my chest from the beach, one on my arm from the park.
Some leading sun creams don't offer 5-star UVA protection, exposing your child to sun damage that's as permanent as a tattoo. Be certain with Soltan. Exclusively at Boots. Find out more at boots.com/Soltan.
Extract 6.
A man and his wife had a row about their savings. She wanted a facelift, he'd like the drive repaving. They talked about that money, and still here they were, in a row about having work done to the grouting, or to her. Despite their little tiff, both could sure agree. A 10-piece bargain bucket with 3 extra pieces free is a mighty good deal. To help make them both nicer, so they went to KFC to discuss a high-yield ISA.
At participating stores only until Jan 29th.
Listen again. Example.
Look, we know that boy's gonna ask again, so let's be ready.
Fine, I'll be him. You ready?
Ready.
Mom, could you hook me up with a GoPhone?
You'll run up the bill, son.
Yo, that's whack, Moms. GoPhone is totally different.
What? It'll only cost me an arm?
Chillax. It has unlimited talk and text.
Seriously?
Word.
Okay, we'll get a GoPhone.
Really? Really? That is the bomb.
Do you even know what the bomb means?
Yes. No.
Go phone. Only from AT&T.
Extract 1.
With breakdown cover from the AA, we'll do whatever it takes to make sure your big wheels keep on turning. Our mechanics usually get you going again in 30 minutes. Breakdown cover from the AA. Because anything can happen.
Extract 2.
Sweetie Pie. Snookums. Baby Bear. Honey pot, tootsie wootsie, baby cakes, princess, honey bun, sugar plum, cuddle bunny, schmoopy, pookie, booger bear, buttercup, sweet cheeks, dreamboat, cuddle muffin. Have a break from Valentine's, have a Kit Kat.
Extract 3.
Hi, my name's John. I'm about to take a deep breath and try to read the following out loud in one go without stopping. If, like me, you've noticed you run out of breath doing things like playing football with your kids, you've probably thought about quitting smoking, but doing it alone can be tough. That's why I'm going to contact a local stop smoking advisor who'll give me one-to-one support and advice to make sure I quit for good. So I'll no longer run out of breath carrying out simple tasks like this one. To find a stop smoking advisor who'll give you the best chance of quitting for good, visit nhs.uk/smokefreeservice.
Extract 4.
The Chiltern Railway's London Family Travel Card is such a big deal. I'm recording this inside the ArcelorMittal Orbit, home to the biggest slide in the world! This summer, from just £25, you'll get return train tickets to London Marylebone, unlimited bus and tube journeys, and 2-for-1 on many of London's top attractions! Book your London Family Travel Card from just £25 today at chilternbigdeal.co.uk.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Extract 6.
Hey, good to see you again. What tattoo are you getting today?
Mallorca 2018, please. Really big across my back.
Nice. How many is that now?
I've got one on my chest from the beach, one on my arm from the park.
Some leading sun creams don't offer 5-star UVA protection, exposing your child to sun damage that's as permanent as a tattoo. Be certain with Soltan. Exclusively at Boots. Find out more at boots.com/Soltan.
Extract 6.
A man and his wife had a row about their savings. She wanted a facelift, he'd like the drive repaving. They talked about that money, and still here they were, in a row about having work done to the grouting, or to her. Despite their little tiff, both could sure agree. A 10-piece bargain bucket with 3 extra pieces free is a mighty good deal. To help make them both nicer, so they went to KFC to discuss a high-yield ISA.
At participating stores only until Jan 29th.
This is the end of task 1. Now turn to task 2. Task 2. You are going to listen to a radio program about Google's business strategies. You will have to decide whether the following statements are true or false. Statement 0 is given as an example. Your answers must be based exclusively on the information in the recording. Write your answers in the answer sheet provided. Now you have 1 minute to read the statements.
So back to Google, though, and Google R&D. Some of it seems crazy, but, you know, in almost every case, I think what's worked for Google is this undercurrent of, you know, we just want more data.
Yes.
And we'll figure out a way to monetize. It's nice to have a business model where you could say, well, this is our underlying vision, and we don't have to judge whether we're going to make money on a R&D project, just whether it will support the underlying vision, and then we trust that the vision is well enough designed that we will make money out of it. Yeah. Does that feel like what they're doing?
I don't like to use the word vision for Google. I don't think they're a visionary company. They have a philosophy. They have a general philosophy about data, which is that there are two essential ways that they look at the world that's different. The first one and this is, goes back to Larry and Sergey, they think big. You know, somebody will say, hey, you know, let's build like maybe we should build like a little satellite and put it in space. And they'll say, no, let's build a space elevator. You know, they think just gigantic in terms of, and you see this in all the books, especially like In the Plex, all the books about Google. They just take everything that normal people think about and they multiply it by 100 and say, let's do that.
Yeah.
And that's why their R&D budget is billions.
But Leo, I think you have a really good point. If you look at what they've done well, I mean, it goes all the way back to the beginning to the search engine, right?
Right.
Tons of data. They've done really well at that.
Yeah.
You look at, my brain just went. You look at what they did, like things
Android
like
was
YouTube. Well, Android's like the third iteration. If you look at what they're doing now with things like the Google Now integration, which they just announced they're doing more integration from apps to Google Now.
And Google as an ISP facilitates that, both terrestrial and mobile, because they've got Google Fi now.
Right.
They have Google Gigabit in some cities.
Ads, that was it. Ads is the second wave, right? So you got the browser, right?
Yep.
Search engines first, then ads.
Then ads.
Now Android.
Yep.
And if you look at, I think it's somewhere in the rundown.
Chrome,
they're doing
Chrome, own end to end. They can gather data from all of that.
It's the big data gathering points.
But
right?
It's data on you. And do you think there's pushback now from society? In fact, somebody in the chat room is saying that it's coming to an end, says RF2020. Privacy by design is becoming necessary. And isn't that antithetical to what Google wants?
I don't know.
I have been very publicly embracing this notion of, I'll give you everything you want, Google, because I feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of Google. In other words, I don't care what Google knows about me.
Right.
It's not like I'm going to see more ads. I already see ads on every surface. It's a Philip K. Dick universe already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if they're more targeted, that's better as far as I'm concerned. At least I won't see ads for things I can't use.
But are they better targeted?
No, they're not. Why I want to give them more information. I want to help you, Google. I want your ads to be better targeted.
Well, that's why this Google Now thing, I think, is so important and
I
cool
love
in what they're
now.
Doing,
yeah.
right?
I
so
love
Google,
it.
They want Google Now to become your interface. This is the interface to my world. This is the place where I spend my first minute of the day or that minute where I just want to know what's going on. They want to take your eyeballs and dump them into Google Now.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they're doing that is making it more relevant by pulling this information from the app.
Google Now tells me when a bill is going to be due.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow your PG&E bill is due. That's useful stuff.
The reason we're so excited about Google Now is it's the one rare example where contextual information actually works.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, I saw ads on, I think it was YouTube today. It was in another language. I didn't even recognize the language. How do they not know that I don't speak whatever that language is?
Right.
Wow, look
it's
at this. Spotify.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, 70 relationships.
When is that? So this is new integration?
This is new.
They added
Wunderlist?
70 new
partnerships. How do I turn that on?
Listen again.
So back to Google, though,
and
Google R&D. Some of it seems crazy, but, you know, in almost every case, I think what's worked for Google is this undercurrent of, you know, we just want more data.
Yes.
And we'll figure out a way to monetize. It's nice to have a business model where you could say, well, this is our underlying vision, and we don't have to judge whether we're going to make money on a R&D project, just whether it will support the underlying vision, and then we trust that the vision is well enough designed that we will make money out of it. Does that feel like what they're doing?
I don't like to use the word vision for Google. I don't think they're a visionary company. They have a philosophy. They have a general philosophy about data, which is that there are two essential ways that they look at the world that's different. The first one, and this goes back to Larry and Sergey, they think big. You know, somebody will say, hey, you know, let's build like maybe we should build like a little satellite and put it in space. And they'll say, no, let's build a space elevator. You know, they think just gigantic in terms of, and you see this in all the books, especially like In the Plex, all the books about Google. They just take everything that normal people think about and they multiply it by 100 and say, let's do that.
Yeah.
And that's why their R&D budget is billions of...
Billions and billions. But Leo, I think you have a really good point. If you look at what they've done well, I mean, it goes all the way back to the beginning to the search engine, right?
Right.
Tons of data. They've done really well at that. Yeah. You look at... my brain just went. You look at what they did, like things
Android
like
was
YouTube. Well, Android's like the third iteration. If you look at what they're doing now with things like the Google Now integration, which they just announced they're doing more integration from apps to Google Now.
And Google as an ISP facilitates that, both terrestrial and mobile, because they've got Google Fi now.
Right.
They have Google Gigabit in some cities.
Ads, that was it. Ads is the second wave, right? So you got the browser, right?
Yep.
Search engines first, then ads.
Then ads.
Now Android.
Yep.
And if you look at it, I think it's somewhere in the rundown.
Chrome,
they want to own Chrome
end to end. They can gather data from all of that.
It's the big data gathering points.
But
right?
It's data on you. And you think there's pushback now from society. In fact, somebody in the chat room is saying that it's coming to an end, says RF2020. Privacy by design is becoming necessary. And isn't that antithetical to what Google wants?
I don't know.
I have been very publicly embracing this notion of, I'll give you everything you want, Google, because I feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of Google. In other words, I don't care what Google knows about me.
Right.
It's not like I'm going to see more ads. I already see ads on every surface. It's a Philip K. Dick universe already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if they're more targeted, that's better as far as I'm concerned. At least I won't see ads for things I can't use.
Better targeted?
No, they're not. Why I want to give them more information. I want to help you, Google. I want your ads to be better targeted.
Well, that's why this Google Now thing, I think, is so important and
I
cool
love
in what they're
now.
Doing,
yeah.
right?
I
so
love
Google,
it.
They want Google Now to become your interface. This is the interface to my world. This is the place where I spend my first minute of the day or that minute where I just want to know what's going on. They want to take your eyeballs and dump them into Google Now.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they're doing that is making it more relevant by pulling this information from the app.
Google Now tells me when a bill is going to be due.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow your PG&E bill is due. That's useful.
The reason we're so excited about Google Now is it's the one rare example where contextual information actually works.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at, I saw ads on, I think it was YouTube today. It was in another language. I didn't even recognize the language. How do they not know that I don't speak whatever that language is?
Right.
Wow, look at this. Spotify.
All kinds of stuff.
70 relationships.
When is that? So this is new integration.
This is new.
They added
Wonderlist?
70 new partnerships.
How do I turn that on?
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. You are going to listen to an interview with Scottish actor Richard Madden. Read the items that follow and choose the correct alternative, A, B, or C. Item 0 is given as an example. Write your answers in the answer sheet provided. Now you have 2 minutes to read the questions.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We always begin with just a few basics. Where were you born and raised, and what did your folks do for a living?
Thank you very much for having me. I was born and raised in a little village called Eldersley in Scotland. My father was in the fire service for 30 years, and my mother was a classroom assistant in the primary school that I went to, but not while I was there.
So I understand that, you know, this may be hard for some of our listeners who know you from Bodyguard, Game of Thrones, to process, but you put up with some crap as a kid. You were a little bit bullied, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's bullied as a kid, really, aren't they? I think everyone is. I think mine was just probably a bit more specific because I was an actor kid. Mm-hmm. So I missed school. For a couple of years, really, I didn't go to school, and then came back to school with a television show that was a kids' TV show. Mm-hmm. So it was playing to my peers twice a week. So that's kind of a weird situation to get into. And also, you know, I was filming for 2 years, so I had catering for 2 years. So services. And PlayStation arrived. So
right.
Catering plus PlayStation and filming meant I kind of ballooned to quite a rotund young man.
Really? So we're talking like what, preteens still?
No, like kind of from about age of 12, I started to eat more.
And so the fact that you had first gotten even into youth theater was driven by what?
My shyness. I was a really shy, shy kid. And where I went to school, West Coast of Scotland, I went to quite a rough high school. And I was really a shy kid, and I wanted to kind of get my confidence up before I kind of dived into this kind of a bit more grown-up world. So I ended up going to youth theatre to try and do that, and imagined to get scouted for kind of a film and a TV show, and it kind of went from there.
First professional role, age 11, what were you asked to do?
It was in a film called Complicity, which I think had a different title over here. It was a film with Johnny Lee Miller based on a book, and surprisingly was actually my first job, and Keely Hawes, who plays the Home Secretary in Bodyguard, was also job, which we didn't work out until the last about 2 weeks of filming when we were both talking about it. And she was like, wait, you're in that? And I was you were in that? She was like, yeah. I was like, okay. But it was quite a tough role, I think. My part was kind of these flashback sequences. And so I was 11, and the main bit was that my character was raped in the woods by this kind of big 50-year-old red-headed Scotsman, and then I kill him with a log.
Right.
So it was a kind of baptism of fire, of diving straight into heavy drama, which is a really interesting thing, is to kind of read that Ian Banks novel as an 11-year-old, because it's very much an adult book.
Yeah. And so that then, I guess, pretty soon after was followed by this kids' TV series, all this stuff. And then, so what you're saying is when you go back to school, when you're not on a set, on top of whatever people are giving you a hard time about weight and whatever, you're also the kid that was in the movie and was raped, and now you're on the kids' TV. So it just started all over again. And is that what led you to, at least for a little while, walk away from acting?
Absolutely. I think there was that. And it was kind of very confusing because I had a job. You know, I was 12 years old. I had a job. I learnt my lines at night. I went to work in the morning. I worked with adults all day, not a lot of children. And, you know, my parents were always, you know, very kind of happy vibes. I was like, their friends around a lot. So I was kind of in an adult world from a young age, and literally was, because I was filming. So, I mean, I was the first kid I knew to get a mobile phone, a cell phone, because it was the only way to keep in touch with my parents.
Right.
So I did all that. And then you went back to school and you were suddenly a child again. Mm. You'd speak to the teachers like you would speak to your director or a co-star, and they'd be like, be quiet and sit down because you're a child at school and we're adults.
Right.
And you were like, oh, this is not the world I'm used to. So that, you had to kind of adjust again. And then it was tough. And so I really took a bit of time out of acting.
And when it came time to wind down high school, apply to what you were going to do next, one of the things I came upon was that it wasn't really treated seriously that drama school would be a viable option, right?
No, I was told absolutely you will not get into drama school, and if you do and survive it, you'll definitely never work as an actor. It's what my school told me. So I wasn't allowed to apply to drama school unless I applied for a real university degree. So I applied for computing science, which I didn't even know what that was. Really. But I had to apply for that in order to apply for drama school.
You wind up at Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, and before you even graduate, you're doing Romeo at the Globe Theatre, then right after you graduate, you're at the Royal Shakespeare Company. I mean, it seems like something happened over those years where you really maybe gained some confidence, blossomed. What was it at drama school?
I wanted to, and I think maybe that's quite interesting you asking me this, because it makes me kind of pierce things in my head, I suppose. I wanted to work, and as much as I loved being in drama school, I left after the first year because there's only so much I think you can learn from 20 other people that are the same age and same mindset, same experience as you, whereas you put me in a rehearsal room with two actors that have been in the business for 30 years, I'm going to learn more in that 6 weeks of rehearsing and then, you know, 2 months on stage than I am from 6 months of drama classes with actors of the same ability level as me, the same experience level. So I think that was a big motivator for me, and I got this job in a studio theatre in Glasgow, and it transferred to London, that play, and that's where I got picked up and ended up going to the Globe to play Romeo for the first time.
Was that your first big leading role?
I think that was my first big, that was my first big stage leading role,
And at that point, had you grown comfortable in your own skin? You were a little more confident about just life generally, being an actor, all of that? I guess you had to be to get that far.
No, I'm still waiting for that moment to happen, to be honest.
Listen again.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We always begin with just a few basics. Where were you born and raised, and what did your folks do for a living?
Thank you very much for having me. I was born and raised in a little village called Elderslie in Scotland. My father was in the fire service for 30 years, and my mother was a classroom assistant in the primary school that I went to, but not while I was there.
So I understand that, you know, this may be hard for some of our listeners who know you from Bodyguard, Game of Thrones, to process, but you put up with some crap as a kid. You were a little bit bullied, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's bullied as a kid, really, aren't they? I think everyone is. I think mine was just probably a bit more specific because I was an actor kid. So I missed school for a couple of years, really. I didn't go to school, and then came back to school with a television show that was a kids' TV show. So it was playing to my peers twice a week. So that's kind of a weird situation to get into. And also, you know, I was filming for 2 years, so I had catering for 2 years. And PlayStation arrived. So
right.
Catering plus PlayStation and filming meant I kind of ballooned to quite a rotund young man.
Really? So we're talking like what, preteens still?
No, like kind of from about age of 12, I started to eat more.
And so the fact that you had first gotten even into youth theater was driven by what?
My shyness. I was a really shy, shy kid. And where I went to school, West Coast of Scotland, I went to quite a rough high school. And I was really a shy kid, and I wanted to kind of get my confidence up before I kind of dived into this kind of a bit more grown-up world. So I ended up going to youth theatre to try and do that, and I managed to get scouted for kind of a film and a TV show, and it kind of went from there.
First professional role, age 11, what were you asked to do?
It was in a film called Complicity, which I think had a different title over here. It was a film with Johnny Lee Miller based on a book, and surprisingly, it was actually my first job, and Keely Hawes, who plays the Home Secretary in Bodyguard, was also job, which we didn't work out until the last about 2 weeks of filming when we were both talking about it. And she was like, wait, you're in that? And I was you were in that? She was like, yeah. I was like, okay. But it was quite a tough role, I think. My part was kind of these flashback sequences. And so I was 11, and the main bit was that my character was raped in the woods by this kind of big 50-year-old red-headed Scotsman, and then I kill him with a log.
Right.
So it was a kind of baptism of fire, of diving straight into heavy drama, which is a really interesting thing, is to kind of read that Ian Banks novel as an 11-year-old, because it's very much an adult book.
Yeah. And so that then, I guess, pretty soon after was followed by this kids' TV series, all this stuff. And then, so what you're saying is when you go back to school, when you're not on a set, on top of whatever people are giving you a hard time about weight and whatever, you're also the kid that was in the movie and was raped, and now you're on the kids' TV. So it just started all over again. And is that what led you to, at least for a little while, walk away from acting?
Absolutely. I think there was that. And it was kind of very confusing because I had a job. You know, I was 12 years old. I had a job. I learnt my lines at night. I went to work in the morning. I worked with adults all day, not a lot of children. And, you know, my parents were always, you know, very kind of happy vibes. I was like, their friends were around a lot. So I was kind of in an adult world from a young age, and literally was, because I was filming. So, I mean, I was the first kid I knew to get a mobile phone, a cell phone, because it was the only way to keep in touch with my parents. Right. I did all that, and then you went back to school, and you were suddenly a child again. You'd speak to the teachers like you would speak to your director or a co-star, and they'd be like, be quiet and sit down, because you're a child at school, and we're adults. Right. And you were like, oh, this is not the world I'm used to. So right. that, you had to kind of adjust again. And then it was tough, and so I really took a bit of time out of acting.
And when it came time to wind down high school, apply to what you were going to do next, one of the things I came upon was that it wasn't really treated seriously that drama school would be a viable option, right?
No, I was told absolutely you will not get into drama school, and if you do and survive it, you'll definitely never work as an actor. It's what my school told me. So I wasn't allowed to apply to drama school unless I applied for a real university degree. So I applied for computing science, which I didn't even know what that was. Really. But I had to apply for that in order to apply for drama school.
You wind up at Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, and before you even graduate, you're doing Romeo at the Globe Theatre. Then right after you graduate, you're at the Royal Shakespeare Company. I mean, it seems like something happened over those years where you really maybe gained some confidence, blossomed. What was it at drama school?
I wanted to, and I think maybe that's quite interesting you asking me these because it makes me kind of pair things in my head, I suppose. I wanted to work, and as much as I loved being in drama school, I left after the first year because there's only so much I think you can learn from 20 other people that are the same age and same mindset, same experience as you. Whereas you put me in a rehearsal room with two actors that have been in the business for 30 years, I'm going to learn more in that 6 weeks of rehearsing and then, you know, 2 months on stage than I am from 6 months of drama classes with actors of the same ability level as me, the same experience level. So I think that was a big motivator for me. And I got this job in a studio theatre in Glasgow, and it transferred to London, that play. And that's where I got picked up and ended up going to the Globe to play Romeo for the first time.
Was that your first big leading role?
I think that was my first big, that was my first big stage leading role,
And at that point, had you grown comfortable in your own skin? You were a little more confident about just life generally, being an actor, all of that? I guess you had to be to get that far.
No, I'm still waiting for that moment to happen, to be honest.
This is the end of task 3. Now you have 3 minutes to write your answers in the answer sheet. This is the end of the listening test.